Welcome back on a Tuesday downtown.
Been up since the crack of dawn, just trying to get paid. Been hotter than 100 suns. I can't
believe this. No, this was a better choice than ministry.
Okay.
That's good.
It's Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. 86 Hammond Street in Bangor. Eric Meehan joining us and spinning the tunes.
Yes. Well, you know, we're talking dirt on the boots today.
Yeah.
That's why, yeah. We're also talking New World, so I almost had him play Ministry New World Order. For those five people of you listening that would have appreciated that more.
And Kerry had it ready, if need be. That one was a little slow starting. Wasn't you. You pushed the button. It was delayed start there.
It was Spotify that went, I don't want to play that.
Right.
Well, you can't trust Spotify.
No. Welcome.
Thanks, man. It's nice to be here. Before we get into Dirt on My Boots, though, by the way, you were talking about the draft lottery with our good friend just now. Try explaining to your 8-year-old daughter the draft lottery. It is unbelievable.
I don't even understand the draft lottery.
That was part of my problem. Well, to explaining tanking as well.
Right.
See, there's this thing that they tried to prevent called tanking, which actually doesn't involve tanks. It involves telling professional grown men and women to lose on purpose.
Mm.
Why would they do that, Daddy? Well, it's so that you can get a theoretic percentage chance of it.
And see, the Celtics have a 2.5% chance of getting a top 3 pick, but they don't want that because financially they're better off if they don't have a top 10 because of the cap.
Sorry, honey.
Yeah.
Now off to school. Ta. So that was fun. It's incredible. So good luck to everybody really hoping out there.
And that's why I have John come on. Just tell me what it means.
I hate to, you know, wish for chaos in this sort of situation, but I just want like some absurd team to get the number one pick.
Right.
just throw all the... I also enjoy seeing like Knicks fans and New York fans just suffer. So,
well, that, as John talked about, I thought, well, of course, the Knicks would be the only team that could get Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie and still find a way to screw it.
Don't mess it up. That's right. Although people used to say that about the Jets, and they might be getting things right, and the Giants are getting things wrong. That's okay. So why are we talking about dirt on boots and stuff?
Well, indeed.
So this is the part where we've been talking about appellations and stuff, and I kind of wanted to we're going to talk about the New World today and sort of how the New World decided to structure the organization of their terroir, their dirt. Right? We've talked about the Cistercian monks in Burgundy and how they explored their dirt and kept careful records for hundreds of years. And we talked about how other people have tried to abscond illegally with the name of other people's dirt. But let's talk about the dirt of the New World. I was, it came into focus for two reasons for me over the past 24 hours. Number one, I finally got around to trying to watch the movie Bottle Shock, which is based on a book that I actually have a test copy of. My old mentor in Princeton was one of the test readers, and he gave me this copy about the Judgment of Paris, which, as you all know, because you are all faithful listeners, is the tasting in 1976 organized by a guy named Steve Spurrier, not the football coach, but the British wine merchant, played by Alan Rickman, which was the only decent thing about this movie, by the way. He organized this tasting of California wines versus French wines, and the California wines won. And that launched California and subsequently basically the rest of the New World into the limelight. And that's all great. But the movie is not good. but it did bring into contrast watching a stoic Bill Pullman as the owner of Chateau Montelena and a pre-popular Chris Vine as his bumbling son. Watching these guys getting dirt on their boots, right? Getting, you know, really out there working and trying to, and this is what I kind of want to point out, what people were trying to do in the New World when they got here is find those little patches of dirt that reminded them of home. Mm. They weren't trying to create California Cabernet and stuff like that. They were trying to make wine. We're talking Italian immigrants. We're talking Eastern European immigrants. We're talking French immigrants. We're talking all sorts of waves of immigration, and they were looking for plots of land that reminded them of home, reminded them of the terroir that was so special at home, that that terroir was delimited and noted as this place or that place, and this place is specialer than that place. They weren't trying to reinvent the wheel in any way, shape, or form. And that's very important. You know, they're essentially, it's the idea of respecting the grape, right? Like, we're not going to get to the new world and try to plant a grape that was so successful at home in a warm area, you know, maybe in Sicily or something like that. We're not going to try and plant that grape in a cold region. It's probably not going to work. You know, our, you know, 5, 7, 10 generations of my forebears taught me that wasn't going to work. So we're not going to try to do that. But then what happened? Like, why then are we even bothering to have this segment on the radio today? Why are we talking about the new world differently? Well, because obviously, especially, you know, when we began this month, you know, we recognize that a lot of Americans don't understand why the name of a village or a town or a region in France or Italy or whatever is supposed to tell you what's in that bottle. We're used to seeing a grape name. We're used to seeing or just a label or something that sort of seems like, oh, it's a big jammy wine or something like that. Well, why? Why don't we understand that a Napa Cab, or perhaps another way of looking at it is, why didn't Napa decide that Cabernet should be its red wine? And so if you buy a bottle of Napa red wine, it is by law or definition Cabernet. It could be Zinfandel, it could be Merlot, it could be any number of things. Why? Why is that? Why isn't that? So it's kind of important to understand, again, that people do respect the dirt out there for its ability to grow things, but they didn't necessarily decide what varietal has to be there. So they have this concept, just like in Europe, of the single vineyard, but it's not necessarily a small vineyard. In some cases, it's a very big vineyard that will stretch for acres, and it will not necessarily be planted to the same grape. It will certainly not necessarily, and this is definitely the case in parts of France. We talked about Burgundy is this way specifically. It's not necessarily managed by in the same way. Very often these much larger vineyards will have contracts for a certain row or a certain grouping of rows, and they are to be done this way, whereas the next couple of rows might be planted to something different under, you know, a 10-year contract to somebody else. It's a very different idea, though the respect of the terroir is the same. And why are they planting different things? I don't know. Well, probably because they're trying to make money. And why do they think they're going to make money that way? Because in the late 70s, a guy who we've all heard of, Robert Mondavi, decided that Americans want to buy wines based on where it's from. They wanted to buy wines based on what was in the bottle that was easier for them to understand. They understood Cabernet Sauvignon. They understood Merlot. I don't particularly understand why he thought that, to be honest with you. I don't think that people who, at that point, you know, this is 40 years ago, 50 years ago, we're talking about 40 years ago, We were only a very, very recently removed from immigrants themselves. So I don't think it was that tough a concept. But he decided to do it anyway for his marketing purposes, and it really took hold. Now, it's important for you all to understand that any bottle that you buy in the U.S. that is marked with a grape name only has to contain 75% of that grape. Just for you people who, you know, swear up and down that you don't drink blends or think that blends are a new trend, they're not. They're not. It's the same idea as they've had in Europe. They try to make drinkable wines, and if this vintage they need to add a little bit more of this grape to make it drinkable, they're going to do that. Unless, of course, they're trying to show what a mono varietal tastes like, and they're going to expressly say in that case, this is 100% Syrah. This is 100% Merlot. So it's just kind of interesting to think about that we've essentially done the same thing. We're just treating it in a different way, looking at it in a different way. And I think that's definitely sort of, you know, a lot of it's based on marketing. A lot of it's based on what they think Americans want to drink. And as I keep noting, now that we're the number one consumer of wine in the world, that's not a terrible idea to do. So in the little time I have left, I also want to mention how America has decided, instead of town names and stuff like that, how we've decided to break down the regions that we grow wine in well, and that is, I'll remind you all that it is the AVA, the American Viticultural Area. And that was brought up within, again, the past 40, 50 years that we've started doing that. And we haven't really taken to within those viticulture areas, creating like the cru systems that you have in France or whatever, saying this is better than that. Really, all you have within those areas is that idea of the single vineyard. And whether or not you think that's great, I think sort of depends on the vineyard itself. If it's a really choice little plot high up in the mountains, that means a lot more than something that's rolling over acres and can get vastly different sunlight, vastly different rainfall, vastly different drainage. But that's how we do it, just so you all kind of understand that. So next week we'll be talking, I believe, about port and that that particular little appellation and what that is. I do want to mention this Thursday, so 2 days from now, from 5 to 7, will be our monthly tasting in the store. We're still hammering out. We're not going to taste everything that we tasted on air, because unfortunately some of them are not available to us right now, which is sort of the symptom of rolling over vintage time, which is what we're in right now. But that said, come on in. We're going to have a lot of really tasty stuff, as we always do. We're going to have the Groundwork Rosé that I think is absolutely phenomenal. So fans of bigger, bolder rosé, do come in and try that. And we'll have some other really good stuff. And we are working on several exciting announcements. So stay tuned. Wine dinner fans, festival fans, good stuff for you coming down the pike. So stay tuned. And next week, I'll join you all here for port.
Look forward to that. How'd last weekend go with your performances?
It went very, very well. Somebody noted I was a little stiff on Saturday, which is true. My leg kind of locked up and I almost actually crashed over my amp.
Oh, dear.
So I'm glad that didn't happen.
Me too.
And also the people watching was extraordinary, as it always is at the Poorhouse. So that was fun. But yeah, always a good time, man. Everybody needs catharsis. That's mine.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Thanks, Eric.
Cheers.
That's Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Message in the bottle every Tuesday afternoon.